The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly, horrifically named podcast series. But the QA is the important part that obviously stands for question and answer as we make this an interactive conversation, breaking down some of the top tech stories that happened over the last week. Why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday is it gives us some time to sort out our feels, kind of get back into the flow, and then also follow up with stories over time. We're not just getting outraged by a headline. We're really trying to look at how these situations evolve. So I hope everyone, especially as we're kind of getting to the end of 2020, I hope you had a lovely week and a fantastic weekend and you got to spend some time, I don't know, maybe playing a fun video game. We've already started to chat here where you know, we've been talking about different platforms and cyberpunk. Maybe you're a cyberpunk 2077 kind of person. And we're going to have a lot of conversation to be had on different tech topics, including, you know, NVIDIA's PR meltdown. Maybe that'll dovetail into some chatter on the games we're playing. I'm totally stealing this from Jeff Cannata, but I just think it's been hilarious that over the launch of this game, a game that so many people, it's been years in the waiting for Cyberpunk, who would have called it that apparently Stadia is like the safest way to play it right now at launch. Reasonably high quality with good frame rates. It's a humongous undertaking. It's actually incredible to me that any video game or any movie actually gets completed these days, because expectations are just incredibly high, impossible to satisfy. And games are now so complicated that they're basically always going to be an evolving service. You can do better. Some companies do better than others, but the more ambitious you get, the more likely it is that parts aren't going to work. They're going to need some time to polish up. And I think Cyberpunk is a pretty good example of that, because I have every confidence that this game is going to get polished up over time. But we had to know it was going to be a little clumsy out the gate. Alice Bockley, I'm going to have a field day with Facebook today, aren't I? Yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking about Facebook. We actually have a pretty full show, links, news, and tech topics to dig into. So, and also, my voice has just been a little fuzzy last couple days. So, hopefully, I can hold this out. What I might actually do, I think I'm going to turn up my my volume here a little on my mic, and then I'm going to come in. We're going to talk a little bit more conversationally. I'm not going to play any kind of gimmicky ASMR game, but maybe I don't need to project as much. I can still be, gesturing and gesticulating. I don't think that's how you pronounce that word. All right, why don't we knock out some housekeeping? I'm on one cup of coffee, and this is already feeling. I can already feel this is going to be kind of a silly show. And then from ER 1980, the irony that Cyberpunk 2077 is a major boost for promoting Stadia. Every review I've seen, Cyberpunk is running well on Stadia. This is a good opportunity for people to see how well cloud gaming works, and a good opportunity to promote the platform. You all know, I mean, if you've been following my video, my videos and my podcast and my commentary, just like Netflix, just like movie streaming, game streaming is going to be a viable alternative. Any type of distributed platform computing, maybe you don't need to buy in 10 years, you probably won't need to buy a super powerful workstation. You'll just be on the hook for a subscription service to offload computational processing. We need to work on our infrastructure, obviously, but to pretend like that's not, that these types of solutions aren't already sort of viable platforms for a good gaming experience is kind of silly. Yeah, as we were kind of getting into the launches for the new Xbox and the new PlayStation, acting like, well, we're always going to have a powerful box that lives under our TV. I don't think so. See, and Hargle Blargle is playing Doom Eternal on Stadia while he listens to this show, while they listen to this show. It could be, just putting those pieces together, you get some good web streaming, you can always kind of move those parts around, you can game from anything that has a data connection. It's pretty good times. All right, let's knock out some housekeeping here real quick. 9:06 in the a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I had a few fun videos and an editorial kind of blow up, which was fun. Let's see. Let me get this out of the way here. And all of the links that we're going to be sharing and talking about, including the housekeeping and then moving on into the news block, everything's going to be on somegadgetguy.com. You can catch the show notes for this week's episode. From last week's podcast, immediately after the podcast, the day after, there was a huge announcement from Apple talking about the AirPods Max. Apple showing off $550 Bluetooth headphones with a terrible travel case. So we had to do a reactions video on that, and I was super stoked to have LFA Reviews and Board at Work, two of my favorite headphone junkie buddies. That sounded really wrong. It sounded much cooler in my head. They are headphone junkies and they are my buddies. Whew. They were kind enough to join me for an off the cuff. This really was a reactions live stream just as the information was coming out that this is what Apple was going to be pulling off. Absolutely wonderful. About an hour long conversation. Not only as a video, you can catch it on the Twitch and you can catch it on the YouTube, but we also cut it up into an audio podcast. If you're subscribed to the SGGQA audio podcast feed, you've got a wonderful conversation waiting for you there. We're also going to be talking a little bit more about that at the end of this podcast in the gadget block. I've just had a few more thoughts since that initial conversation and some hopes and some concerns for where Apple's going to be going this gen of audio hardware. What was amazing timing, though, Apple kicks off this conversation about really expensive premium audio style solutions, and I have finally finished up my review of the Phio Q3. This is a wonderful little platform of audio awesome. It's a little hip flask with a battery and signal processing hardware. It's not just an amp. So it's not like you plug it into like a mediocre headphone port and it just makes that headphone port louder. If you connect it over USB-C, it is an audio processing deck. Because I know like in the past we've seen some products like that where it's just an amplifier. This is the full, it's a pocket computer dedicated to audio processing. And it incredibly good audio processing. So, you know, Apple is sort of instigating this, you know, you have to pay a lot for over-ear cans that we'll see if they really perform anywhere near that price point, especially opposite like sub $300 Sony XM4s. But at the same time, you can grab this little hip flask and plug it into a USB-C cable, and you've got some premium tier processing for $150. Pair that with some $200 cans, and you're well under that Apple premium. You're in AirPods Pro territory for incredibly good audio quality. And I'm tired of crouching this. I actually say this in the video. Like, in the past, I might have said, well, this might not be a beginner solution. Maybe you want to look at this if you're more experienced. Anymore, I'm going to push back. If Apple can sell $550 headphones, I'm going to start positioning audiophile gear towards beginners. Why not? You know, if your argument is convenience with all the techie stuff, great. You know, true wireless earbuds, AirPods, go nuts. If your argument is I want more of my money to go towards audio quality, let's have a conversation, because we can break this up real well, and it's not wallet busting like it used to be. I enjoy the occasional cranky rant about design and UI on my channel. I really felt it was time for me to push back against app drawers that change directions. I think they're terrible. I think we can all agree that you are objectively wrong if you enjoy sideways scrolling and paging through apps. It's less efficient. It's more disrupted when you install many apps. Like, if you're like me and you really do things on your phone, sideways app drawers are literally the devil. And by literally, I mean figuratively. So I put out an editorial video on that, and it surprisingly got a decent amount of traction. But one of the things that was very encouraging is the last article I'm going to share here. I toyed with trying to make this a video series, and it tanked. And it tanked pretty bad, just in terms of like sharing and engagement. And it was a lot of work, and they just didn't do all that well. So instead, it's content that I feel it's content I still want to produce. But it's a conversation that I don't think I can continue in video. So a few phones, like the Galaxy Note 20, I believe was one of the first that I did this for. And then I did the a gaming phone, the Red Magic 5S. But it's this OnePlus 8T that really does seem to be kind of picking up a little bit more traction. So I did a buy the benchmarks, looking at the OnePlus 8T, but then also trying to compare performance on Android 10 to Android 11. So just kind of clicking into this real quick. As I go through the article and for my collection of benchmarks, not only do I highlight OnePlus 8T performance, I'm also looking at my OnePlus 8 Pro from my benchmarks recorded earlier in the year against what they are now after the Android 11 update has rolled out. And so it's kind of interesting, because if you follow tech reviewers, I'm doing big bunny ear air quotes there, who mostly rely on synthetic benchmarks for their performance conversations, you're missing out on a very important part of the conversation when it compares against real world performance. So like right now I'm doing the screen share, and we can talk about Geekbench 5 CPU scores. And well, wouldn't you know it, Android 11 scores on the OnePlus 8 Pro are lower than OnePlus 8 Pro scores on Android 10. Android 11 is tanking the performance of the OnePlus 8 Pro. We should be very concerned by these CPU scores. But once I start getting into video rendering, audio podcast mixdowns, photo batch processing on RAW files, you know, there are a number of places where I don't feel that Geekbench score actually relates to real world performance. And in some ways, it turned out to be the opposite of some phones having much higher Geekbench scores not doing as well for really putting work through an app. It's so curious. So, all snarkiness aside, I wrote up an awesome article about it, and people seem to enjoy it, and it's starting to kind of build a little bit of its own momentum. Not like I'm going to become the Gamer's Nexus or the Enantech of smartphone reviewing in that kind of clinical sense, but I'm at least encouraged to continue doing by the benchmarks. And I know I'm preaching to the choir. I've got a bunch of people in the comments going, oh, synthetic benchmarks. I would never rely on synthetic benchmarks. And you're watching a show like mine. So I feel like we're going to be simpatico in a lot of this kind of stuff. But again, it's just another opportunity to push back against some trends that I think are entirely lazy. App speedrun tests, and then, well, here's an AnTuTu score. Yeah. None of my work is AnTuTu. None of my work is Geekbench. If my work relied on processing information through Geekbench, then I would feel like I could stop the conversation at Geekbench. Geekbench just starts the conversation so we can see which phones juice their synthetic benchmark scores as compared to real world performance. So, it's good times. So, my website, just as its own dedicated platform, maybe gets, a couple thousand hits a day, if that, sometimes a lot less than that. The morning I put up that OnePlus 8T by the benchmarks, it got like 1500 hits. It's just like immediately. So, that was a fun Saturday there's this kind of common idea, like it's way easier to monetize YouTube ad revenue. My site doesn't necessarily bring in any ad revenue because I don't put a ton of ads on my website. I haven't built my site well enough to look at like conversion rates, like how many people click through the site and then go and buy merch, like none of that has any kind of, correlating, data tracking, but seeing a couple thousand hits on one article in one morning, that felt pretty good. So I'm happy about that. I feel like that's at least enough to consider continuing putting these articles together. Whew. It's good times. So Dave Bo 9, basically OnePlus forgot to cook the books on their Geekbench score when they made Android 11 for the 8T. I gotta say OnePlus has been a little bit more measured in how they kick on the performance for synthetic benchmarks. I want to say it was for the OnePlus 6 or was it the OnePlus 5 where they got caught legit cheating. There was a performance mode that consumers did not have access to that when it detected a benchmark, the phone would like light up and start really crunching information. Samsung got caught doing the same thing and actually was sued successfully for it. There was a class action lawsuit for the S4 or S5. I might have my timeline wrong on that. And OnePlus got caught doing the same thing. And a number of manufacturers have been caught doing similar things. Really, if you look at those synthetic benchmark scores, my hypothesis would be as Android 11 is tackling a couple different things and different priorities for how it moves information around. And we are likely looking at some GPU performance upgrades. Remember, the 865 was all about these GPU drivers, improving performance over time. We're not seeing direct driver, not like in a Windows sense, right? NVIDIA pops up in my control bar and says, there's a new driver. Do you want to download it? And I go, okay, it's probably going to mess things up more than it's going to fix, but let's try it. It seems like these refinements and improvements are being included in some of the major operating system updates. So, you look at some Geekbench scores and they got worse. Well, I feel like that's the prioritization of certain applications and how Android is processing that information. But when you really put the power down, when you really put the rubber on the road, there are some surprising results based on that info. I'd actually say, it's been nice to see. I don't know of any manufacturer this year that has really juiced up their benchmarks. Like not in any way that I would say is cheating. What I am concerned by, though, is if you're trying to do something that requires a slightly longer workflow, like editing and rendering a video, that takes a little time. Well, your performance might degrade by a higher degree on some phones than other phones because of thermal throttling. That kind of thing you kind of want to take a look at. That to me is the bigger concern. I think most phones with this current generation of chipsets can spike some great scores in short bursts of activity. Awesome. I'm of the argument that we should be looking at more prolonged use as people are using their phones more and batteries are improving to enable people to use their phones more. So, hey, good morning, TK. I'm always happy to see TK in my chat watching this show. Everyone should be subscribed to TK's channel too. And we might have a few things to talk about. Maybe TK and I are planning some kind of conversation in the near future. From Punch-kun, I think there's a disconnect. Benchmarks are popular on PCs because they place components against each other for comparison, but there's too much additional behind-the-scenes optimization phone-to-phone that makes different phones excel at different tasks, and people don't realize that. Well, it's why we're trying to broaden that conversation. I feel tech, especially mobile tech reviewing, has gotten really lazy. Gabaletta, I called BS when Qualcomm said that about GPU direct driver updates. I was super skeptical. I was really skeptical that it was going to play out like it does on the PC. You know, when components on a PC get individual software updates, it's a very sort of direct one-to-one process. I'm a little less skeptical that the manufacturers aren't taking advantage of software optimizations to improve performance. And that Android 11 seems to utilize GPUs a bit better. So some of the improvements that you can see from the very early Snapdragon 865 phones and the ones that are now getting Android 11 updates, it might be the manufacturer or it might be Android, but something seems to be happening where some of that GPU performance is getting better. All right. All of these stories, everything we're going to be talking about here coming into the news block, I rambled on way longer than I needed to for housekeeping. Everything's going to be on somegadgetguy.com, show notes for this episode. Make sure you're liking and subscribing and sharing and thumbs upping. And if you catch this on the replay, if you're not the type who wants to sit in front of a video window, don't forget we put together an audio version of every week's show just so you can have me kind of floating on in the background, just kind of soundtracking some other activities. Maybe you just need to clean your man cave. You're just picking things up and you want some companionship. You want me chatting in your ear while you do it. That's the gig. Matt Tyler, like we said yesterday, sharing is everything. Sharing is caring. All right. I'll take a quick sip of water here. So we've got a pretty hefty news block, and I always say things like, I want to chew through the news block real quick. I'm going to try. There's a major Facebook story we've got to talk about, but this was breaking news. This was important, not breaking. I don't know why I'm saying that. This was big news last week. it's a story that warrants a mention so that we can keep an eye on it and we can follow up with these shenanigans as we close out the year and as we're in the middle of a political transition. Matt Tyler, real quick. I promise I'm not going to ramble on about the tech politics too much, but we need to keep this on our radar. This is coming by way of Vice and Motherboard, so apologies for their... I don't like these overly manipulatively, that's not a word, manipulative, apparently that is triggering my stutter pretty good, manipulative headlines. The GOP is jamming through the appointment of unqualified Trump ally to the FCC. Now, Carl Bode does some great work. So again, I would recommend following Carl's conversations on tech and politics, but this headline is just kind of meh. It doesn't help actually illustrate what's going on. So the Senate today voted 49-47 along party lines to move forward with an unqualified Trump ally to the FCC for a five-year term. It's an aggressive move by the GOP. Experts say will not only help Trump attack free speech online, but could mire the Biden FCC in partisan gridlock for years. A final vote is expected later Tuesday. Trump pick Nathan Symington has no experience whatsoever when it comes to telecoms or consumer protections. What Symington does have is a willingness to pursue Trump's heavily criticized plan to use the FCC to undermine Section 230 of the CDA, a law groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation say is essential to protecting free speech online. So the long and short of this is, the rest of the write-up from Motherboard, what Carl Bode has put together is actually a pretty good look at the entire process of how we got to here. But the long and short of it is Trump originally nominated someone else during the heyday of his executive actions trying to remove Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. That individual came out and said, oh, no, I'm not for gutting Section 230. I just believe it needs some refinement. And Trump's administration kind of threw a hissy fit and pulled his nomination. And then they found this other guy whose only role, it seems, because, again, he has no experience in this arena to any great degree. His only criteria was, I agree with Trump. We need to remove free speech protections for multimedia companies on the internet. So that's pretty obvious gamification, and it's a very disturbing trend of sowing chaos into every component of representational government as the Trump administration will eventually be escorted out of the executive branch. And at some point, someone should probably start talking about how these types of actions bring aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States. I feel like that's going to be someone who's bigger and grander and more important than I to host that kind of a conversation. But this is important for us in the telecommunications space. Those of us who enjoy tech as a hobby is just to watch what this guy does. Something tells me he is going to be the continuation of a conversation that started with Ajit Pai of trying to keep the FCC in some form of regulatory capture by the industry that it's supposed to be policing, and that nothing he will do will be to the aid or to the benefit of the citizens of the United States, but will be a vote along really narrow band ideological ideas. Whether you're for or against net neutrality, it's a debate that overwhelmingly has popular support. We have major problems with infrastructure, broadband adoption, even counting who has or does not have access to broadband. And focusing all of his efforts on Section 230 to repeal it, which is dumb and unconstitutional and likely not going to happen, is a ton of energy that is going to be tied up in courts, tied up with lawyers. Tax dollars are going to be spent to an incredible degree to argue something that should never have been argued. This is something that legislators need to refine, but that's not what's happening here. That's not a good faith argument for this type of action at the tail end of a lame duck administration. Simon says Hypno. That's not fair, Juan. Symington has telecom experience. He can retweet conspiracy theories. Just like Ajit Pai showed us, even without net neutrality, you can still share all of your tasty memes. You don't need protection from billion and trillion dollar companies. Oh. So this is disappointing news. We need to keep our eye on it. Moving right along, in another just massive government and state-sponsored action, this is going to be playing out in courts forever. I honestly can't envision a timeline where the full ramifications of this next story don't play out over 10 years. So this was big news. This is huge. It broke December 9th. I've got the AP feed here. U.S. government sues Facebook for predatory conduct. This is written up by Marcy Gordon and Michael Sisak. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Excuse me. The U.S. government and 48 states and districts sued Facebook Wednesday, accusing it of abusing its market power and social networking to crush smaller competitors and seeking remedies that can include a forced spinoff of the social network's Instagram and WhatsApp messaging services. The landmark antitrust suits announced by the Federal Trade Commission and New York Attorney General Letitia James mark the second major government offensive this year against seemingly untouchable tech behemoths. The Justice Department sued Google in October for abusing its dominance in online search and advertising, the government's most significant attempt to buttress competition since its historic case against Microsoft 2 decades ago. Amazon and Apple have also been under investigation in Congress and by federal authorities for alleged anti-competitive conduct. The rest of the AP write-up is pretty solid and, again, just kind of follows the timeline of how we've watched Facebook's policy unfold in the public space. And it brings up, we have some very difficult ideas to untangle in our government and in how we regulate industry. And I'm not entirely sure there are good answers. I feel a lot of this conversation becomes overly simplified. If you're anti-big government, you bring up, well, regulators signed off on these acquisitions. It was a done deal. And I feel there's a conversation that these situations evolve over time. And I don't believe any approval for massive companies merging and forming even larger conglomerates should ever be sacrosanct. That move should never be one and done. One person signed off on this 10 years ago. It should stay that way forever. I feel as we get new information and as we see how policy has evolved or changed and how business gets conducted in different ways, the original sign off on Facebook buying Instagram was a completely different internet landscape than what we face today. And it needs to have some kind of ongoing regulatory oversight for what's in the best interests of consumers. At the same time, I'm also very concerned because I don't feel our elected officials have always demonstrated that they have the best grasp of how this stuff works. But I think we would all agree there are some substantial issues with how Facebook conducts itself on the global stage, how Facebook gets away with not paying taxes, with how Facebook is able to assert its market position and copy the products of competitors. When it can't buy out a competitor, it manages to find ways of replicating a lot of those business practices. And then it just has a chilling effect on competition in general. At the same time, as it's made discourse in our country demonstrably worse. Facebook's manipulated – I got manipulate right on the first try. Facebook's manipulation of your content makes this all worse. There's an obvious pattern of Facebook trying to keep its users on site rather than serving them the information that they claim they want to see, or confirming bias, or enabling groups that are terrible for democracy to have platforms to raise funds and find new members. None of these are easily solved questions. And if we're talking about divestiture, forcing Facebook to try and carve up its businesses while Facebook is actively trying to make them as tangled up as possible, the recent, commerce that's been added to Instagram, combining Messenger so that it's all threaded together between WhatsApp, Facebook, and Instagram, really trying to knot it up as much as they can. This is a fight that will probably be in the courts for, I can't imagine that this is over in years. I mean, I really believe this is something that we could be talking about 10 years from now. When we only had one telephone operator, we had AT&T, the distribution of mom, pa, bells, local and municipal, you had to rent your rotary phone from the phone company and they could charge you arbitrarily. I believe divestiture took over 10 years before we were able to break up the bells. You know, without that, we wouldn't have had Verizon, we wouldn't have had T-Mobile, we wouldn't have had all of the smaller players, the US Cellulars, the Sprints. We wouldn't have had any competition. We know every market improves with competition. Facebook is in a unique position where online, there are other things to do online. But we also need to start enabling our government to have a conversation about online commerce in a way that isn't 50 years old, because the average age of a sitting politician is like 70. We need to start bringing this lawmaker conversation up to the 21st century. It would be nice if we could bring this lawmaker conversation up to the 20th century. So again, I'm very, the news on this is again, it's something that we need to keep an eye on, and it's going to be an exhausting conversation if we really follow all of the legal wranglings between various state governments, the federal government, the FTC, and what Facebook is going to do to try and to the conversation on its own platform to make it come out the good guy in all of this, when we all kind of know Facebook really isn't the good guy. That's going to be exhausting, and it's going to be a number of arguments in bad faith, and it's going to be a lot of angry rhetoric with very little action being applied. And the wheels of politics and law are so slow that it's just going to be a lot of outrage porn and tough headlines and hot takes before we get to anything like an initial summary or a judgment or a ruling that will actually affect public policy. So long, but it's begun. It's here. It's started happening. Sorry, I'm just gonna, let's kind of look through some of these comments here real quick. From Gabaletta, I've lost faith in the government to properly look for the benefit and rights of the major population. It's become more about how much money they can put in their pockets. I feel that conversation is changing with younger lawmakers trying to make names for themselves. Whether or not you consider it political grandstanding or pandering or what have you, there are a few. First of all, it's just funny that, you know, when we look at Facebook, this is bipartisan. Liberals and conservatives are not happy with Facebook, and both sides feel like they are the victims. That's a bad position for Facebook to be in. when both liberals and conservatives, when the GOP and the Democrats are claiming they are wronged by Facebook policy, even beyond our sort of bias reality distortion bubbles, that's not good. That I would be nervous if I were Facebook. At some point, they will win against a corporation. But it's in how this policy is enacted, and it's in keeping pressure on our elected officials so that they know we do care about this stuff and we do pay attention to it. And that's difficult because it's exhausting. It takes so long that we get burnt out. But if we don't join the conversation, then the rules are written by the people who will benefit from it the most. From Punch Coon, I foresee the end of this being Facebook moves Instagram features to Facebook, then sells off Instagram to let it die to appease lawmakers. I kind of feel like, especially because Facebook in and of itself was already a platform like Instagram. Nothing that these individual platforms do can't be copied or replicated. Oh, I want to share little snippets of video. Okay, you can do that anywhere. You can do that on YouTube. We had Vine. Like, it's not novel. It's an eminently replicatable service. And the only thing that kind of makes a service blow up is the idea of exclusivity. TikTok became this cool place to kind of go that wasn't like Instagram, and it wasn't like Facebook, and it wasn't like YouTube. And then it blew up, and it's going to become another in the list of other video sharing streaming platforms. There's nothing special about it. It doesn't bring anything new to the table. So yeah, I feel like these efforts might end up in some token gesture from Facebook, but even just the name, you know, the name Instagram or the name WhatsApp, you know, these individual pieces and parts and properties, it becomes precedent. And that's actually what I'm most interested in, is can we set a precedent for enabling better regulatory responsiveness to perceived harms in the consumer space? So we'll see. At this point, this is the only thing we have left. If it's just, well, you've got to deregulate and let the free market. Well, you deregulate and then you let the top players buy up all of their competition. If it's, antitrust is dumb because, you know, you gotta just write better rules. Rules and situations and conditions change over time. So you wrote a rule 30 years ago. Guess we can't change it. That doesn't make any sense. You know, we wrote a law about automobiles in the 50s. Is that what we should hold to? You know, someone said leaded gasoline was fine. Should we still keep using it? You know, the stuff changes. The relationship we had with Facebook 10 years ago is different than it is today, and that requires some kind of adaptive consideration for potential consumer harms. And if we can't adapt, well, then we're going to fail. So it can't just be government bad. It's the only tool we have left. And unless you all want to become Facebook shareholders and try and influence Facebook shareholders to make less money, there is no other leverage that we can exert other than elected officials and lawmakers. That's it. That's where we're at now. There is nothing else that's going to sway Facebook policy and improve conditions for people utilizing social media services. That pie's been baked. So now we need to figure out something else. The last, I reduced my usage of Instagram with the latest change. I see less of my friends' posts and now seeing complete strangers. That caused me to check out real quick. I still share to Instagram. I mean, I don't even have enough followers to like embed links. I'm not like an Instagram user. I'm not an influencer. But when they started changing the timeline and they didn't give me an option to go back to chronological, that just sucked the wind out of my sails on Instagram. I used to have a lot of fun just kind of paging through. And now seeing like where it's obvious, I liked one person's photo. And then it's like, well, you must like that person's stuff. I'm going to give you all of their stuff from the last week. And you're like, well, why didn't you just show me this when they posted it? Why is this now showing up in my feed in an obviously manipulated kind of way? I'm going to keep using the word manipulate. It just bothered me so much how stuttery I got on the word manipulate. I'm adding shopping tools and, you know, changing the location of the like button so the muscle memory is tricked so that you tap something else so you'll engage with their platform. It's all just fake. All of the numbers are fake. All of the likes are fake. The video views on Facebook, they're all fake. None of this is legit. So it's just frustrating for seeing something that I think had so much potential for being what its mission was in a photo sharing service. Kind of makes me want to like, maybe I'll go back to Flickr. I just want a platform to talk about photos and to share photography and to engage with people who care about that kind of stuff. And there's like nowhere left to go. It's like I've got a photography room on my Discord, and I've got some folks that are better photographers than I am, and they're sharing stuff in there, and that's good enough for me, as I know they're real people and they're real pals of mine, and I see exactly when they post that stuff. Great. I guess I'm good. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support, sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. Thank you, Alice Bockley. Got an emote cheer there. Really appreciate that. And thanks for supporting, and thanks for hanging in there. And ER1980 is telling me to check my posture and hydrate, and Kyoto and ER doing too. Let me handle that. We're done talking about class action lawsuits, right? Antitrust. We can move on. I think we can move on. Let's do that. Al Greg, right, we could make our own place to go on with blackjack. I'll make my own Instagram. Oh, we'll talk about the S21 leak. Don't worry about that, Dink. But we've got to cover a couple more news stories here. I want to wrap out the news block with the NVIDIA PR disaster that befell Hardware Unboxed, and that's going to be kind of a personal story for me too. So we're gonna move through these real quick. Out of Engadget, a very positive story for those of you consuming adult entertainment. Pornhub removes all unverified videos from its platform. This is a great move, which you've got to kind of have a verified account to upload adult content, and should actually help. I mean, again, this should significantly help in reducing depictions of abuse, of revenge porn, of trafficking. I'm very positive on this. I keep flirting with the idea of making Pornhub my backup channel. Like, I'm unhappy with YouTube's policies, and maybe I'll just create a non-adult channel on Pornhub. You know, they monetize. Why not? But seeing something like that, I think is encouraging. So I'm glad to see a company who drives like an insane amount of traffic, you know, for this topic that we all like breathlessly clutch our pearls. It's adult content. Yeah, they're like one of the major destinations on the internet. So a significant change like that, which probably affects their bottom line and makes it more difficult for people to engage with their platform, but is to the betterment of society. I don't know. I feel like other video streaming services could probably learn a few things about how to conduct themselves on the internet from a move like that. So, there are some good headlines, for potential videos that I could share on Pornhub. Hickey85, this is Aditya territory now. So yeah, it's pretty funny. I can't read through some of those. Just a couple little Twitter bits here. Some interesting things to keep an eye on. So Twitter apparently is in the sharing spirit. They are going to enable sharing directly to Snapchat. I guess that's maybe I'll create a Snapchat account that's just nothing but my Twitter posts, copied over there. So maybe that's a thing. But it's rolling out for iOS. It means we should get it on Android in 2022. But yeah, if you were worried that your tweets weren't getting noticed like they should, you can now share them as Snapchat stories. But then the interesting thing here is Twitter acquiring screen sharing and video chat startup Squad. So this is I'm curious to see what Twitter might do with a company. They're going to be shutting down the Squad app. Shutting down. It's apparently already been shut down. It was shut down December 12th. So Twitter, we're pretty confident that Twitter might be sort of end of life-ing Periscope. So a video streaming service, live streaming. They were trying to build up Periscope as this like Johnny on the spot, the immediacy of Twitter, but for video. So I'm curious to see, as they buy Squad, is that going to be the replacement for Periscope, or is this going to be some other kind of competition play against maybe more of a Discord server style, smaller community kind of platform. So I'm really interested to see what Twitter might do here. Anytime that there's some play in video streaming, video sharing, I'm very anxious. Like, how might this work? What should we expect? And what does this mean for the platforms we've already been using? There might be two people watching this on Periscope right now. I just got a comment from Artin. As a photographer, if you don't post on Instagram regularly, you will be out of everything, and that's messed up. And commenting on that last Instagram story, that individual, if Periscope goes away, might not have found my show. So what is it that Twitter is hoping to accomplish with more of a sort of a Zoom meets Teams competitor? You know, is Twitter going to become that platform where we all try to collaborate? I really don't think so. I got to get another mug of water here. All right. So two stories from Twitter, just some things to keep an eye on. And then, I just got to mention this, but we're not going to focus on it too much. We can kind of bring these up occasionally just over the last couple weeks. But I am a hearty advocate for ARM computers competing for consumer applications. Apple's M1 is blown up. Everyone's talking about it. It's great. It really is a great chip. I'm just frustrated because, like, we've been here for a while trying to get more desktop style use out of phones and tablets. It's not new. Apple didn't really invent this. They're just going to suck up all of the media awareness for, oh, this isn't an Intel processor and people are doing work on it. Great. Cool. But if it means more developers might actually support ARM, awesome. And one of those is Microsoft. So I'm really stoked to see Microsoft finally introducing X64 emulation in preview for Windows 10 on ARM PCs. So if you're getting those early builds of Windows and you're in the Windows Insider program, Windows on ARM can now emulate software that was written for 64-bit CPUs from Intel and AMD. For the best performance, please install a preview version of the Qualcomm Adreno graphics driver from the following locations. So apparently, the three main products that are going to be the initial test of this Windows on ARM emulation, Samsung Galaxy Book S, Lenovo Flex 5G, and the Surface Pro X. If you've got one of those three ARM-powered devices, I would highly recommend checking this out and then seeing what kind of performance you might be in for. I got to play with the Surface Pro X, but it was for like an afternoon. So I have no practical experience really trying to drive what this emulation might look like. And just like we see with Apple and Rosetta, I would expect, what do we think the over-under on this is? Do we think like it's going to be about a 20% drop, a 30% drop in performance as compared to a native ARM app? So I think that's kind of what we're seeing with the M1. I want to say it's about a 20% drop. When you have an app that's written for the M1 versus an app that has to be emulated through Rosetta, it seems to be about 20% or 30%. Depending on the benchmark and how you measure and the testing and blah, 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 blah. But the M1 was decent enough, is a powerful enough chip just all on its own that it kind of makes up for some of that. And it's at least comparable, if not still slightly better than an Intel powered MacBook. When we're looking at phone processors being used in laptops, I'd say maybe 30%, maybe a 30% hit as compared to a native ARM application, but emulating, and if it's still reasonably decent performance, I just don't think it'll probably be as good as a comparably priced Intel, definitely not an AMD chip, when we look at just the wealth of legacy code that you have to support on Windows. Ah. From Abhishek, I agree that ARM is the future. My PhD research is completely based on translating algorithms to Android phones. That has been mostly developed and tested on MATLAB and Python for an x86. Major problem I'm facing is the lack of libraries for scientific applications. Definitely work we need to get done there. From Al Spockley, Apple's biggest problem is the fact that it's all but absent from 95% of professional environments, not counting the odd graphic designer hopefully bringing in their Apple laptop only to end up working on the company Dell. From Raymond, would you even notice a 20% drop with Word or Excel? I mean, again, this is very application specific. If you're looking at like file compression, yeah, 30% would be noticeable and that would suck. You're looking at Word, no, come on. And it's so frustrating because, again, it's so tied up in benchmarks. I don't know, this one benchmark is 30% slower. Cool. So are we talking a fraction of a millisecond opening, you know, a spreadsheet? Or are we talking like wheel of death as it spins and then it just never loads my PowerPoint presentation? What does that mean? And it's frustrating when I can't get to that answer. I ran a Cinebench. Cool. What does that mean? Does that mean I won't be able to render a video in Resolve in a reasonable time? Or does it mean like, did this make it better? Is it, I mean, yeah, we would expect it's going to be slower, but can I do it? And if I can do it, then that's still a net improvement for the platform. Oh, but it's Windows on ARM. Microsoft can't do anything right. Cool. Did you try? I'm getting the feeling that you're not really trying. And I feel like you're just saying it's garbage because that's what your readers want you to say. Did you try? Because when I try, it seems to work. It's just the thing I've kind of found. Nick Fell, would you with Excel? Yes, you would notice a 20% drop. from Zelk Knight, I'm of the opinion that Apple should stick to x86. It's workload and application specific. But if you've been sleeping on ARM, then you've missed a computing revolution that is very exciting to follow. And as I'm putting together coverage, I mean, people keep bristling at this stuff when I say it. I got into another conversation on the Discord, like comparing the A13 against Snapdragon 865s. And you're like, these folks, you're missing the forest for the trees. If I can render a 4K video at a 50 megabit per second bit rate for YouTube consumption, you have to spend quite a bit more to unseat a phone than you think you might when you're comparing laptop performance on desktop grade video editing software. But to arrive at the same product, I'm doing the exact same edits with similar transitions because they're never going to be exactly the same. Watermarks, soundtracks, I can do rudimentary color correction. I can do chroma keying. I can do keyframing. I can do masks and layers. I mean, like we're talking some pretty high end stuff that 5 years ago you wouldn't have been able to do on an iMac reasonably well is now just being destroyed by a phone. I mean, again, we're talking price performance. MSI sent over their creator laptop. So this is an Intel Core i7. What is it? It's 10875. Is that what's in here? I think it is. Yeah. Anyway, an RTX 2060. It's just a beast of a laptop. This is a $2,000 laptop. That $2,000 laptop for RAR compression is twice as fast as $700 phone. So that's good, but it's more than twice the price. I mean, it's like one of the first things I was just kind of messing around. I was like, let me try my RAR compression test because you can do RAR. I mean, RAR makes the same app. They kind of compare workflows exactly the same. And like, oh, well, yeah, it was faster. It was twice as fast as a $750 phone. That's good. Wait a minute. It's a $2,000 laptop and it's only twice as fast as a $700 phone. That puts the phone in laptop grade performance. Obviously, you can outperform the phone. You are now spending more to outperform the phone than the actual performance benefits as a price performance metric would indicate. That's the reality of where we're at right now. So I get, you know, Apple wants control over their own destiny. They want more control over their supply line. They don't want to have to license as much to outside parties. They want to make sure that consumers can't upgrade or repair as effectively. I get why they're doing it. But the actual technology, this has merit. ARM is going to be a major component of consumer-grade computing moving forward, and is already starting to shake up how we treat data centers and servers. I mean, again, it's competition, and it's competition we've needed opposite AMD and Intel. And ER1980, also Project Latte, bringing Android apps to Windows. We covered that 2 weeks ago on the podcast. From Nick Fell, for Apple, I think ARM makes sense. For Windows, no, there's too many professional applications that leverage those expanded libraries and instruction sets. YouTube Twitch focuses on video-related performance because it's topical, but there's so much more in various industries. Price performance is not a scale where you can always shoot for the greatest value. Often you need a minimum of performance no matter the cost. This is true, but that is also saying we're never going to see the evolution of those applications, those libraries, that developer content ever come to ARM. That is true of this moment right now. When we talk about Windows on ARM, we bring up, well, yeah, there are these glaring issues with legacy software. It's legacy software. It is not the future of software. And it's always going to be the thing. Like Apple can make that play because they don't have to support older. I mean, there's just not the same entrenched professional use of MacBooks in these various types of applications. So it's okay if they kind of wreck the legacy support, and then developers just have to get on board making new applications for the platform. Like, we're fine giving Apple that leeway. We do the same thing for Windows, and we're probably going to find similar results. At some point, those applications change, those libraries adapt or evolve. You find ARM versions of how to accomplish those same sets of data, just as comparing RISC to CISC, how x86 processors now try to cluster and group information in very ARM style instruction sets for the efficiency that ARM provides. That goes both ways. I don't feel like we need to descend this podcast deep into the weeds on our instruction sets and the differences between various computing platforms, but the raw horsepower is there. I'm not anxious at all about the software catching up, and to kind of write it off like, oh, well, you can show video, like, that's easy. It's not. that is a pretty, a pretty meaty use of any computing platform. And demonstrates what I'm talking about for raw horsepower. We're not saying the software is one-to-one. We're not saying there's parity. We're saying we've been overbuying for this processing power. And if software developers start catching up on this, there really is no consumer benefit to sticking with one type of platform to meet their computing needs. In fact, their computing needs could be met with a different platform, and one that probably costs less, performs the same, offers better battery life, and brings other advantages like better integration for, you know, mobile cell networks. Now, that has not been a strong suit of Windows x86 powered laptops. That could be a very strong suit for ARM powered kit. So again, it's evolution over time. I'm of the mind, move the apps over. If we can emulate the apps, that might work too. And in fact, when we see this kind of legacy support for x64 emulation on ARM, it might become a moot arguing point. You know, it's overly conservative to think that we can't migrate a lot of this legacy content over to a different platform. All right. We should probably wrap this up. Oh, I think I killed the link for it. I want to spend some time in the news block finishing up. Sorry, there's one more comment from Nick Fell here. Do you think Windows really could strong arm industries into moving to ARM? Loads of companies are perfectly willing to keep using Windows 7 or even Windows XP. Well, first of all, your premise is completely flawed. Microsoft hasn't gotten those people to move over to Windows 10. So they are irrelevant to the conversation of software moving forward. I worked at a Department of Energy facility that used an HP 3000 in the age of Windows XP. That company was irrelevant to the conversation. The people you're talking about, Nick, are irrelevant to the future of computing. They are not contributing to the Windows 7 conversation. They didn't they're on Windows. Your thing was Windows XP and Windows 7. They didn't contribute to the conversation on Windows 8. They didn't contribute to the conversation on Windows 10. They won't contribute to Windows on ARM, Windows 10X, Windows RT, whatever it is. They don't contribute to where we're going to go. So at some point, they'll need to pull the Band-Aid off of their XP and Windows 7 machines, and they will just have to react to whatever the market will give them. Those of us who want to drive the future of software development and hardware and looking at consumer solutions primarily first as one application to getting ARM up and running and into the hands of more consumers, we will drive that conversation. Then those companies, when all of those machines fail, will have to react. That's the way this is going to go down. Nick, you got to back it off, man. Sure, they're irrelevant, but if people are willing to become irrelevant, Microsoft will lose them as paying customers going forward if they make things incompatible. Well, first of all, the story was on emulation, making things compatible. So, Nick, you're not really following the thread here, are you? You're arguing because you have some kind of investment or fandom in x86? Because I'm not sure what you're driving at. They're already not paying customers if they're on Windows XP or Windows 7. They're already not moving forward. At some point, they'll have to make that shift. So if people are willing to become irrelevant, Microsoft will lose them as paying customers. They're not paying customers. Microsoft hasn't lost them. At some point, they'll move forward. Are they going to go to Linux? Are they going to go to Mac OS? Their options will be other ARM platforms. I'm so frustrated that Microsoft emulation for x86 and x64 software is a little bit worse than what it would be if I had a comparably priced x86 chipset. I'll go to Apple, where there aren't any of those legacy applications and where it would be another emulation layer for the M1. Where are they going to go? Do you go to the company that's at least trying to emulate and support that older software? Or do you jump ship and try and rebuild your entire thing on a Linux build or on Apple? Nick, you're not there, man. you're off the plot, bud. All right. We got to talk about NVIDIA because that's also going to be cranky and sad. Oh no, Microsoft's going to lose people who aren't paying for their software anyway. I guess they'll go to Apple, where they'll all be on ARM processors. Sorry. That is the best argument that doesn't work at all. Okay. I'm really not trying to roast you, Nick. It's just I feel a number of people are very invested in this conversation and probably aren't considering some of the broader ramifications of moves like this. So, I just got to compose myself here. So over this last week, there was a major PR snafu coming by way of, let me see if I can pull this up. NVIDIA is a massive corporation. And I got to go to the Hardware Unboxed YouTube page here. Hardware Unboxed. And I'm not going to play this video because it'll be a copyright strike. But they early last week, they shared an email from NVIDIA PR. And a Hardware Unboxed is a website that really gets into performance testing on CPUs and GPUs and other individual computer components. And I like their content. I tune in fairly regularly. They're in that same vein of like Anantech and Gamers Nexus. A video from them might be someone just sitting in a really cool room with stuff on shelves and then just showing you benchmark bar graphs. But I feel there is a dedication and a consistency to their testing protocols. I like that kind of content. So they get this email from NVIDIA PR saying, I'm grossly oversimplifying it here, but it was a really ugly peek behind the curtain of what PR thinks of content creators, what NVIDIA believes their role should be in being advertising arms for the company that makes the products. And they basically said, your content doesn't align with our marketing, so we're not going to send you review hardware, Founders Edition GPUs anymore. This exploded. This story blew up, and even Linus had some pretty brutal commentary. For someone like Linus, this was about as dire a conversation as you could expect, talking about how NVIDIA is dog whistling and how this is manipulative. I pulled that word off again. And that this is a really ugly look for the entire industry. It makes reviewing worse. It makes everything more difficult. And it entrenches some of the most toxic aspects of fanboyism. You're team red or you team green? Are you team Intel or are you team AMD? Are you team NVIDIA or are you team Radeon? You know, this stuff sucks. We see it in the phone space. I'm primarily a mobile reviewer. I don't have any great fondness for covering Apple and Samsung in my commentary because of the overwhelming number of Apple and Samsung knights that like to brigade on my content. You know, the inordinate number of banhammers I've had to wield just to have reasonable conversations outside of the Sam Apple space is exhausting. But one of the things I wanted to bring up about – oh, sorry. So the email gets sent to Hardware Unboxed. They mention that they've gotten this communique from NVIDIA. It turns out it came from Brian Del Rizzo's official email. NVIDIA is now saying that Brian Del Rizzo didn't really send it. It was just an overzealous member of his staff. But regardless of what the story was, it was his name at the bottom of the email. Brian Del Rizzo is the global head of PR and marketing for NVIDIA. So when it comes to interacting with creators, with content creators and reviewers, it really doesn't go any higher. The buck stops with him. And so from there, Hardware Unboxed has this outpouring of support. Numerous people sharing and talking about the situation. Linus Tech Tips just throws a huge spotlight on it. And, you know, for a channel that I don't always enjoy or particularly like what Linus does for his content, for his channel, like also sort of leaning into wacky thumbnails and kind of clickbaity titles, even though that's supposedly counter to YouTube's terms of service. I have to say that his commentary on this was measured, was nuanced, was mature. It's the top story on Our Glowing Rectangles, sharing the podcast, The Wine Show, just so that you can get a sense of what this looked like when Linus decided to weigh in on it. And I think it was a really ugly look for NVIDIA as a company that has demonstrated in the past that they can utilize their size and their market position to chill competition. And if there's anything that you can follow from my videos, the thing I'm most passionate about is good competition. So I was very concerned about the NVIDIA GeForce Partner Program. You know, when NVIDIA tried to manipulate the branding and the marketing of other manufacturers to prevent them from highlighting AMD products. And that a part of the NVIDIA program was you weren't allowed to talk about the program. So it was all crouched in this kind of absurd secrecy. You know, we can look at a company like AMD, and they just recently had a processor launch, and they just recently had a GPU launch. And of course, they had big claims and bar graphs and benchmarks, and not all of those have really played out in real world performance or in testing from some of these platforms. But we can criticize, you know, just like I criticize Apple for putting out unlabeled bar graphs and it's 50 times more powerful than something, you know, that is, you know, like old. Those aren't as insidious. What NVIDIA did in saying the quiet parts out loud was kind of show that there are members on the NVIDIA PR team that are, it's their job to try and alter or manipulate the content of reviews to make sure that that early wave, that this isn't like a fair review process. And if we really break this down, when I'm listening to Linus or when I'm listening to Hardware Unbox, you know, describe what went down with this graphics card launch with an independent reviewer, they're a pretty solid medium tier review channel. Like, how many subscribers do they have? 695,000 subscribers. So they've got weight to throw around. They're not as big as Linus, but they're big. They're really big. That's great. But unfortunately for NVIDIA, this also showcased kind of the relationships that many creators and reviewers are apt to have if their channels are smaller. And I can definitely speak to this from personal experience, because I've prattled on about like Samsung in the past. So what's important to take away from this is the culture around our hobby, the culture around technology. We want to act like we're above media manipulation. We're above the advertising. We're above that kind. You know, we're based in facts. We deal with facts. I look at these benchmarks and I look at these results and I look at these performance tests and I'm a rational I'm making a rational decision to pick one product over the other based on objective data. And none of that's true. none of that's real. We're just as emotional. We're just as easy to game and to manipulate. And that this is now a double whammy. Big popular content is reinforced on YouTube as a platform. And then from there, if you don't kind of toe some kind of party line on a certain or a particular kind of audience, if you're not team green or you're not team red, you don't kind of aim your sights in one direction or the other, your content will not be as successful. You will have less access to review materials. You'll be behind the curve. NVIDIA can throw this chilling effect on your content, making sure, hey, you're a decently sized review channel. Sure would be a shame if you don't have access to this hardware in the same kind of time frame, so that when you get your review out, subject's already talked to death. I don't do a ton of Samsung content because I don't have access. There is no reason for me to spend months on Samsung content when I'm already starting at a huge deficit in the timeline. The Galaxy Note 20 was talked out a week before I got my hands on the Galaxy Note 20. So the amount of time it takes me to produce content, the amount of time it takes me to test performance, to come up with opinions, to have my hot takes, it's never going to pay back. It's never going to work. I'm sitting here listening to Linus, and I watched the follow-up video where NVIDIA sort of tacitly apologized to Hardware Unboxed, and you know, this was an oversight, and this is something that shouldn't have gone down this way. It doesn't change NVIDIA's position, though. You know, I have to believe that there are individuals in NVIDIA that are still going to be operating by looking at these metrics and saying, where do we get the most positive coverage? Who's going to do our work for us in promoting the features we care about? Who's going to really be a herald for ray tracing? And then we'll make sure that we kind of lean into their direction, which is just funny because like Hardware Unboxed was also quoted as one of the big positive comments on DLSS performance. So to pull graphics cards from Hardware Unboxed because they weren't, you know, positive enough for NVIDIA coverage when they're literally one of the outlets and resources that NVIDIA quotes on their own website is also just galling. Like, you've shown us love, you haven't shown us enough love. And so now you won't get more graphics cards. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Are you in the market for a new pair of headphones, Bluetooth speaker, or some true wireless earbuds? Then you've come to the right place. I'm here to help you make better audio purchasing decisions. From budget brands like Empow, Tautronix, to more well-known brands like Sony, Sennheiser, and AKG, I'm reviewing them all, including Soundcore and one more. My name is Jeff, also known as El Jefe Reviews all over the internet, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And I make tech reviews of audio products from a regular person's perspective. I answer the questions so you know what to buy, what works, and what doesn't. So before you make that purchase decision, make sure you check out one of my full reviews, and that way you get all the info you need to make a better decision with your money.
I just feel like it's the airing of grievances this holiday season. Yeah, when I was looking at joining Pocket Now, and I didn't understand that this was the relationship going down. But apparently, shortly before I joined up with Pocket Now, two editors at Pocket Now were escorted out of a Samsung Unpacked event because Pocket Now editorial ran with covering a leak on some kind of Samsung tablet. They sent people to cover an Unpacked event, and they were escorted out by Samsung, by the security at that event. At least as I understand, this is how the story has been relayed to me. So this is coming secondhand. After that event, as Michael Fisher was looking to move on and to create his own channel, they reached out to me as something of a replacement. They just needed another body to fill the video editorial hole that was going to be left by Michael Fisher. My videos were still super, super raw. I really wasn't trying to do anything kind of, you know, cinematic, or I was just, you know, hands on a table holding a gadget. That's really my kind of commentary, but did a lot of camera conversation and I did a lot of audio conversation, and they seemed to like that idea. As soon as I joined up, we immediately had a problem where we couldn't get our hands on the Galaxy S7. Pocket Now could not get review hardware, not just timely review hardware. It was refused us by Samsung PR. They were still punitively holding out against Pocket Now, as far as we understood it, because of a story about a tablet leak. And while we could cover some of their events, we were still invited to events. We weren't on the list for review hardware. Pocket Now tapped me, because I had a decent relationship with AT&T at the time. So those early review devices for Samsung products came by way of AT&T, not from Samsung directly. And our coverage was late. Later, as we started getting into like the Note 7 fiasco, one of the editors at Pocket Now found some methods for picking up devices in very gray markety kinds of ways, a product that might have fallen off the back of a truck or was going to be utilized in some other application, and we could get our hands on it. So while the rest of the Samsung reviewers had something of an embargo, on releasing their reviews, we were able to kick off some coverage because Samsung wasn't working with us. Samsung wasn't playing ball with us. We weren't on any kind of NDA or embargo, and they weren't giving us review hardware. So we ran with some early coverage that blew up shortly before the phone started blowing up. It was very interesting days at Pocket Now and covering Samsung. The fact that we were able to pull that off at least got Samsung, it at least got us enough attention at Samsung that they were willing to start talking to us again. They slow played us for the Galaxy S8, and we had to buy those phones, but we were in process and we were sharing with them, like, there might be the potential for us to do this again with the Note 8 where we can find one and we won't be playing by your embargo. We won't be playing by your rules. That entire time that I was at Pocket Now, it was a part of my responsibility to try and clean up the relationship between Pocket Now and Samsung. Eventually, we got back to a point where we could get review hardware again. We were having those conversations. And at that time, I was already starting to look at leaving Pocket Now. I just don't feel I was a good fit for their audience. I wasn't getting to produce the kind of content I wanted. And we were devaluing the camera deep dives and the audio deep dives. It just wasn't stuff that was picking up any kind of traction. So it didn't make sense for me to stay. After I left Pocket Now, I reached out to Samsung and said, hey, like, I'm going to be doing this thing on my own. I'm going to be working with Newegg. I still have relationships with the local Fox affiliate. Love to keep up conversations, got the real, you know, flowery PR language back. Good on you, man. That's great. We're going to totally work with you. We're so excited. Anything that you need from us, just let us know. One of the first things that we did, my Fox producer decided he wanted to do some coverage on the Galaxy Note 9. And I'd kind of played off the S9, because I was hoping for an S9 active. I was really hoping there was going to be an S9 active. That was going to be my Samsung phone personal review. I was going to buy that phone, own that phone, use that phone. Note 9 comes around, and the day after Unpacked, someone from Samsung shows up at the Fox offices. I'm on the fly, just memorizing specs, looking at all the features. I put them on air in one of the largest television markets in the United States. And we had a chat just about the Note 9. And then immediately I hosted a live stream on the Fox 11 Facebook page, which I think you might still even be able to still see. And again, for like 20 minutes, answered viewer questions about the phone on my own. Like, I did that. I ran that thing, man. It was great. The phone had been announced the night before. So I'm thinking, like, hey, man, I'm doing solid here. And I reach back out to my Samsung contacts and like, hey, you know, just I know I'm not first wave. I know I'm not, you know, a huge outlet. This is only going to be for coverage on my personal channel, but I'd really like to try and get on this list. I think there's some really interesting stuff to talk about. And I feel like a part of this Note conversation, I'm the Note guy. You know, I love notes. I love actives. Let's hook this up. Oh, well, you see, this side of the PR team only deals with television. So anytime you want to do anything on TV, you just let us know and we'll hook you up for a day so that you can make TV commercials for us. All right. Well, what about the web and influencer side? Oh, we're so happy you reached out to us. Yeah, that's great, man. We'll put you on the list. And there's nothing that we can do right now. But, you know, fighting the good fight and we'll get you hooked up and we'll get you sorted out later on. And then since then, it's been radio silence and Samsung has never gotten back to me. So, yeah, it starts to feel a little bit personal. Hardware Unboxed didn't say enough nice things about NVIDIA. Someone at NVIDIA in their PR team took that personally and then gutted their relationship with Hardware Unboxed and threw a huge black eye over the entire review industry. When we have good relationships with PR, it's this kind of stuff that makes the conversation trickier. I'm going to tell you, I've got good relationships with the folks at TCL. I like working with those people, and throughout many iterations of other roles and other jobs, those PR reps, I've worked with them at other companies and I followed them to TCL, and we follow up on each other's lives, and I ask them how their kids are doing, and we talk, you know, about the holidays. I have a good relationship with LG PR. LG knows they aren't going to get millions of views on my videos, but there's a certain consistency in my approach and the application of the way that I cut my reviews that vibes with the story that LG is trying to tell. And we've been working together very successfully for that kind of content. I have an okay relationship with OnePlus PR. A few of the people at OnePlus have recently shifted positions, and I'm meeting new people, and I don't know if they're going to continue to send me review hardware the other OnePlus PR reps did. It's a changing company, and they're evolving, and they're going to be doing different things. So on and on and on. I like the people over at Sony PR. Again, the phones in North America, phones in the United States, I don't know that Sony corporate is really looking at that as some kind of massive component of the Sony business, but ever since Sony kind of put the phone division under their camera division, at least in terms of public relations, I've been getting along with them really well. It's really fun conversations to talk and geek out about like nerdy camera stuff. In fact, they were one of the first conversations I ever had kind of breaking down the differences with these new like ultra super megapixel dense sensors. It came from Sony PR. That really helped inform how I went about testing cameras. Even if I don't bring it up in a Samsung review, my Samsung review is so much better for my relationship with Sony PR. It's frustrating when something like this goes down, not because I want to keep my relationships with manufacturers secret. It's because I feel it draws a kind of scrutiny that those of us who are really working hard to stay consistent and do this in a reputable way, we will now have to jump through additional hoops to disclose, to highlight, to make sure our connections and our preferences and our biases are well known. I try to tell you exactly what my preferences and biases are so that you understand where I'm coming from. But now it feels like this is increasingly going to be more of like an FTC guideline that we'll need to highlight. And you know, like, this came from this reviewer. I have worked with LG for the past several years in crafting this kind of content. And this video is not sponsored. It's not a paid ad, but I need to offer this as disclosure. And all because someone at NVIDIA got persnickety about a channel I guess they didn't like and felt like the right course of action was to play an incredibly toxic fanboy game with a multi-billion dollar corporation's public relations arm. And to think that that wouldn't have exploded in their face now makes everything harder for everyone. Now makes everything worse for everybody. But it's the continued conversation. It's the transparency. It's, you know, explaining There is a financial component to this. I can't produce this kind of content or these reviews if my time isn't compensated in some way, and I'm not going to be able to. Samsung can put a hurt on my channel. Like, if I try and play ball and only do what Samsung wants me to do, then it's not the channel I want to make. If I don't do that, then my coverage for Samsung is always going to be incredibly late, which means it's not cost effective for me to put as much effort into making Samsung content. So I need to disclose that. I need to highlight that. I need to talk about that and express every single time we engage in one of these relationships and every single time we conduct ourselves in a particular fashion. It's not just, I'm making this, here's for the audience. It's, I'm making this and I'm hoping to appease the Google algorithm so that more people view this content and I can compensate my time for making this content. And there are some personal feelings and personal ideas and personal perspectives that are wrapped up into the relationships that I have maintained for most of my gadget reviewing career. There are people I'm talking to today that I started talking to back in the days of like Nokia phones, when, you know, like Symbian was a real big player in this space. That's how long lasting these conversations have been. And that's how some of this stuff gets as complicated as it does. It's really hard to do. It's not easy. I gotta thank NVIDIA for making this a bunch more difficult. I'm cranky and I'm bitter about this. Not necessarily, I mean, on behalf of Hardware Unboxed, because they got a raw deal. And a bunch of the conversation surrounding their channel is going to be hyper-focused on the relationships they maintain and how they're sourcing their product and their testing applications. And they're probably being called AMD shills out the wazoo on NVIDIA forums and platforms. And unfortunately, that's kind of by design. I agree with Linus. That is a massive dog whistle. Stay in line. Don't stray. These are the talking points. We sent you the reviewer's guide. This is what you're going to talk about. It just makes me sad. It's the rough spot that this industry is in. For this being like a passionate hobby for so many people, the money that moves around based on product launches and consumer expectations and reviews and YouTube, it makes this all a lot more difficult. Okay. So I'm going to take a drink of water here. And thank you all for telling me to like stretch and check my posture. I will do all of this in one straight. Oh. I don't know if that really showed up on mic, but that was a triple pop from my sternum. That's super gross. Whew. From J Million, yeah, Samsung has kind of gone a different way. The last review device I got from Samsung was the S9. And it's kind of the shift that I felt was a very particular refocus from Samsung right around that time. And again, if it hadn't been for a couple smart plays from Pocket now, I'm not sure that they would have continued to get the review devices the way that they did as I was leaving Pocket now. Oh, Aditya, that's super sweet. I need to up Juan's numbers, help him get more views. Well, I mean, again, that's definitely appreciated. The thing I want to focus on is making the content that I want to make, testing phones the way I want to test phones. And then I'm not particularly interested in trying to maintain the YouTube algorithm approved conversation on this stuff. And that's unsustainable. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's not a, I don't know. I don't want millions of viewers if I have to play a game that resembles some of the reviewers out there. From ER1980, and I think we can all agree with that, tech is meant to be enjoyed like food. Particular tastes should be celebrated, not disregarded because fast food is more popular. More people eat it, it must be the best. No. Especially if you're watching a video like mine, I'm definitely preaching to the choir, but it's because you at least like to know about alternative forms of cuisine, even if they're not necessarily your favorite. You like to be kept up to speed on what they really have to offer. And that's the audience I want to talk to. So, moving right along. from Hakey, we definitely heard that triple pop. Simon says hypno, ASMR, chiropractic, crack fun. Super gross. Apologies. I'm old, so all of this stuff creaks and falls apart. All right. From Nick Fell, so Juan, when are you going to review a caviar phone? If tech is food? Let me put that out there. What do you think a caviar phone would be? I feel Z Flip would be, I think, a good demonstration of a caviar phone. Expensive, exclusive. It's a statement. I feel the eating of caviar is as much a statement as those who might actually enjoy the eating of caviar. In the chat. Oh, Simon says hypno, Mate X. I think that's a good caviar phone. I would agree with that. I'm not versed on the language of caviar, so. So, we should probably take just a second out to highlight. Nick Fell, caviar is a brand. I didn't even know that. the new super custom expensive iPhones with gold. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were just using like some kind of hip metaphor. Like, oh, what's a caviar? I had no idea. It's just like, what was Virtu? Never got my hands on a Virtu. Only played a couple times with a Porsche design. That is not my league. That is far and away outside of stuff that I like to cover. I'm increasingly excited when I see another phone at $350. So I wouldn't hold my breath for a caviar review. Oh, thank you. Oh, I remember them now. Okay, I didn't know the name of the company. Caviar makes the phone with moon rocks on the back. Yeah, not my speed. All right, let's plug the subreddit here. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is running crazy long this week. The mission of my subreddit has been better explained over the last couple months. And I've also noticed, like, I don't know if Saeed Ted is watching or listening, but he's been talking about the subreddit on his own live streams. There's been a little bit more momentum over the last couple months, just as a place and as a resource to kind of share a different kind of tech commentary community that's not built exclusively on the YouTube algorithm. You know, this week was a very strong representation of how broad this conversation is. And so the mission of this subreddit is to help share and promote any content you feel deserves more attention. It doesn't mean you can only share content here if you're a small content creator with only 1,000 subscribers. It's a place to start helping the amplification and the search engine optimization for anything you feel really deserves more eyeballs. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And like I mentioned while we were talking about NVIDIA, I shared the WAN show, Linus, talking about NVIDIA, and that's the top story. This is what people wanted to talk about the most this week. The number two spot, LG Wing versus LG V60 versus LG Velvet, video and microphone comparison from Easy Computer Solutions. Again, the Wing is such a fun phone to play with this kind of content. Then Team Vry, 1,100 subscribers, Pixel 3a camera revisited. Right after that, we've got Fandroid, my buddy Nick Gray. Nick Gray is such a good dude. I'm a huge fan of what Nick Gray has been doing at Fandroid. So he's comparing the Fives, a Pixel 5 versus a Sony Xperia 5 Mark II. And it's a really fun camera comparison here. Again, really loaded camera comparison, because I feel like those two phones represent bookends, like the polar opposites of what consumers should expect in some type of mobile computer camera platform. And then we've got Greggles TV. I'm the first to talk about best tech gifts of 2020 under $100, and I cheated because my tech gift was over $100. We've got Tech PhD talking about Galaxy S21 leaks. We've got some doofus in a stupid hat with a punchable face talking about the Fio Q3. Easy Computer Solutions looking at green screening. Adam Reviews Tech looking at the iPhone 12 Pro Max. We've got Technically Speaking, checking out the Pixel 4a 5G. Holla at your boy, Open Mic, episode 19, $550 headphones. And then another, just that guy in the hat with the punchable face talking about app drawers. This was a solid week for the subreddit. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Support. Again, everything that we're talking about, you're talking about relationships with mega billion-dollar corporations. You're talking about better diversity or more points of view for your tech reviews. You want your hobby to thrive. All of this depends on a good collection of content creators, of writers, of video producers, of reviewers joining the conversation. And they can't do that if their content is being sat on by algorithms, if their content is being slow played by platforms. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. It's one tool I've tried to build. And every week we pick up a few more subscribers. Every week we see a few more submissions. We're seeing more upvotes, comments, sharing. That stuff matters. It makes all the difference to a new content creator building their channel. And it makes all the difference to an established content creator keeping the conversation going. So I hope you'll check it out. It's like it's in my browser all the time. It's kind of my favorite thing to see what people are sharing on my subreddit, where I don't always win every week. I feel like it's my subreddit. I'm not saying I should win. I'm just saying. I don't know what I'm saying. DG Anil, budget, $100. Some gadget guy. Here's a DAC amp that's more. I totally did it too. Greggles was like, hey, it's got to be under $100. I was like, well, this is $110. A couple quick little, we're into the gadget block and we're going to end this with some AirPods Max conversations. Real quick. I don't know if those of you who are out there are still keeping up with your Sony news. I still have the Xperia 1 Mark II. I absolutely adore this phone. It is a gorgeous phone. I love this phone. And it looks like the Android 11 update is coming out, where we've got confirmation, at least coming from the Asian markets where this phone is sold, that it will have that 4K 120 frame per second slow motion. I am so excited to play with that again. The Xperia 5 kicked it off, but getting that on the Xperia 1 is going to be awesome. That camera is such a beast. And the slow motion that you can make from the Sony Pro camera app, the Cinema Pro app, is phenomenal. So, yeah, we don't have to wait for next year's Snapdragon 888 to get 4K 120. We can have it today. Aditya Anil, any news about the Xperia Pro phone? Nothing coming by way. If Sony is going to come out with the Pro, I have no idea what their timeline might look like. Or if at some point, maybe they just consider making it a much more limited, or smaller distribution. I don't know. When we get to the Galaxy S21 leaks in just a bit here, I think it's going to be interesting to kind of look at power performance. Because I don't feel this next year the big play is going to be making our CPUs and GPUs substantially more powerful than the generation before. I think it's how do we bump up the power a little bit, but then also improve battery life. And that seems to be a bigger play for the 888. And the 865 is not looking like it's immediately completely outclassed. I mean, the 855 still isn't immediately outclassed. Oh, from Loki Ted, 4K 120 frames per second. We don't have to buy a Sony Alpha 7 for the crisp butter roll. That B roll. Oh no. Don't. Again, 4K 120. And then you can bop that back down to what is it? It's a 24 frames per second. That's 1/5 speed slow motion. It's real pretty. I got that B footage. Oh. There's this one like clip in my Sony camera, in my Xperia 1 and 5 camera review. It's just this old butterfly that's taking off from a branch. And it's just like, it looks like, you know, something like a European, you know, cinematic metaphor of, it's just so pretty. And it came from a phone. It just blows my mind. I'm just going to highlight this. We don't need to dig through it too much, but I'm into this kind of stuff. So I hope you'll check out the folks over at iFixit. They posted a full teardown on the PlayStation 5 with x-rays, component disassembly, and they also showed off the internals of the controller, which I thought was just like a nice little add-on, an extra little morsel of teardown goodness and a decently high repairability score. Again, these consoles have actually been respectable in their ability to be cracked open and have components replaced. And then did I lose it? Where did I put it? I'm just showing you all my stuff here. I wanted to highlight the Galaxy S21 leaks. I don't know why I closed the window that had the Galaxy S21 leaks. So let me move back. There's a channel. Was it Random Stuff 2? Actually, let me pull that up on YouTube and we can go from there. I can't play the videos because like I'll get copyright struck. And just like I said before, I actually had the hardware unboxed video up and I was like, why did I pull this video up? I can't really show it to you, but I'm at least gonna stuff to. So I just want to show this channel. I don't know how, again, if you play certain angles and you understand global distribution and you can look at different markets, just like we found some gap at Pocket Now to get our hands on a Samsung phone, apparently that's still a thing that you can do. So there's this channel called Random Stuff 2. And videos with like 13,000 views, 16,000 views. A new video went up yesterday. It has under 1,000 views. They have a Galaxy S21. They've run Geekbench on their Galaxy S21. They've looked at the outside hardware and some of the software of the Galaxy S21. And they've shown a couple camera samples from the Galaxy S21. So now I feel pretty good. Like, I don't need to review a Galaxy S21. The conversation's already over. Everything you want to know about the Galaxy S21, you watch a couple videos, it's great. This takes so much pressure off of me needing to buy that phone, use it weeks after all of the big reviewers have already put out their videos. I'm good. I'm covered. Samsung doesn't need to worry about me, like, criticizing some things on their phones. We don't have to play this game of, oh, objective reviews. I'm totally fine. Woo! But I wanted to show this off. I mean, this is nuts. I'm actually kind of surprised that, like, there hasn't been some kind of attempt at shutting this down. But yeah, so Galaxy S21. Hold on. You know what? Let me go off screen share. He runs a full Geekbench, and I just want to pull up what the scores were. And I'm going to mute so that I don't accidentally play any audio there. And where is... I might have the wrong video here. Hold on. Oh, he might have cut the scores out. Oh, that's kind of tricky. But yeah, so some camera samples back and forth. Anyway, Geekbench single score CPU was something like 1100, maybe 1200, which would be about a 20% bump over the 865. But again, we're in territory now where 20% extra performance for what? What are you really doing with that extra performance on a phone? And if you're like me, I'm interested. Yeah, give me like 10% better performance. You're supposedly going to get better battery life. I'm really looking forward to, you know, being able to produce more in the field, have these major battery size, these battery capacity improvements, and that we know that the Snapdragon 888 is going to have that integrated radio controller on the SoC. Everything about this next generation feels like the talk, right? If 2020 was the tick for a bunch of new technologies, new camera sensors, new folding phone concepts, new dual displays, all of this stuff was new and fresh. The main rollout for 5G really happened this year. The talk is going to be refining all of that. Battery life is going to improve. Battery life was really good this year. My V60 is a battery life monster. Integrating the radio and giving me better low power modes for a more efficient processor, and give me the same size battery, and this thing is going to be insane when we start looking at phones in 2021. It's just not going to be exciting because we already have all the big numbers this year. We have the 5G, we have the Wi-Fi 6, we have the 108 megapixel cameras. That's not going to move the emotional stuff. So what's frustrating is 2021 looks like it's going to be a better year for efficiency in the Android space, a better year for battery life. And looking at some of the stuff that's coming out, like the multi-core scores, I can't remember what they were. I want to say it was like 3300 or 3500, which is almost exactly the same as what we have this year for the Snapdragon 865. That to me is kind of the eh. All the AI stuff is going to improve. The machine learning stuff is going to improve. But for me, it's we can polish up the experience of the 865, stay at a fairly similar power, you know, horsepower tier, but then really improve that fuel economy. That is going to be awesome. I'm very excited to see what they can do there. And then hopefully all of that improvement trickles down to the 700 series, where the 765 isn't super great. Sorry, I'm on to mug of water number three. My voice getting really fuzzy. So, again, there, I want to, if you want to see the S21 in action, there is the channel Random Stuff 2. And again, is there any chance you reckon this leak is a bit of sneaky PR? Maybe. I don't know. I just, at this point, I'm not sure. Because it, like, 2 months ago, there's a video about the Pixel 5, and there's a video about the iPhone 12 launch, and then three videos getting their hands on this S21. So it's entirely possible that this could be, you know, some fifth dimensional chess. But I don't know. We've seen so many other supply line issues, pixels that fall off the backs of trucks and get reviewed in Russia like 2 months before they launch. I'm kind of the mind that this likely isn't the controlled release of information that Samsung would want to have for a product like this. So I'm filing it under this is probably less manufacturer approved. I don't know. I mean, join in the comments. Do you think that Samsung PR is able to play this game? Is able to play this game with this much forethought? Like, they're that good at staging this marketing. Let me see how far back this channel goes. Let's just see. Videos, Random Stuff 2. So yeah, videos go back 2 years. Oppo videos, top phones with this Snapdragon 845. Will Sony survive? An iPhone XS look. Samsung Galaxy F, why we need foldable phones. 29 views from 2 years ago. An LG V40 video. That's kind of a surprise. Nokia 7.1. I don't believe this is a channel constructed for controlled leaks. I feel like this is a channel that lucked into some hardware to play with. Simon says Hypno Finesse is not Samsung's advertising foray. When you have a $10 billion a year marketing division that only just lost to Procter & Gamble, they were beating Procter & Gamble for advertising a year ago and 2 years ago. They only just lost to Procter & Gamble this year. I should bring up that flowchart. Every time I bring up Samsung, I should bring up the flowchart of all of the brands that... Let's do it. Procter & Gamble. When Samsung competes for advertising dollars... Go to images. Okay. So, when Samsung competes for advertising dollars, they used to beat this company and they only just... Oh, no, this is the full, like, every company I got to get. Come on, where's the other one that I like to use? Sorry, 1 second. That was a great lead up, too. I was really feeling it. This one will work. It's not as good, but it'll do the job for what we need. When Samsung competes for total advertising dollars, they are either beating or just slightly losing to the umbrella of CoverGirl, Olay, Lacoste, Boss, Hugo Boss, Gillette, Old Spice, Tampax, Pampers, Charmin, Always, Secret, Oral-B, Crest, Scope, Fixident, Head & Shoulders, Natural Instincts, Nice & Easy, Pantene, Herbal Essences, Iams Pet Food, Duracell, Braun, Pepto-Bismol, Vicks, Metamucil, Comet, Bounty, Puffs, Swiffer, Mr. Clean, Febreze, Joy, Ivory, Downy, Cascade, Cheer, Gain, Bounce, Tide, and Dawn. Think about all of the commercials you see for Tide. That's one product under one label, under the Procter & Gamble umbrella of companies and corporations. Samsung spends as much on advertising as all of these labels combined. Samsung is not a foregone conclusion. This is not some kind of gadget meritocracy. Samsung just barely lost the advertising spend race to Procter and Gamble, P&G. I'm just saying. So I feel like the leaking the S21 in such a blurry webcam kind of way, probably not what Samsung would be going for the launch of next year's phone, this being like 3 months early. So, oh, from Kyoto. That's not Samsung Mobile. I'm saying the Samsung label. So if you add Samsung washer and dryers, which they often show Samsung phones tapping and pairing with their washer and dryers, if you talk about Samsung TVs, I'm saying the Samsung label, the feeling that Samsung as a brand is ubiquitous and is always surrounding you is because of a $10 billion a year Samsung label marketing effort. And that is all combined. So there isn't Odyssey TVs, it's Samsung TVs. It's not Bixby washers and dryers, they're Samsung washers and dryers. It's not Galaxy phones, it's Samsung Galaxy S. Samsung, Samsung, Samsung. And so that omnipresence of Samsung products isn't because Samsung really does occupy every single sphere of everyone's waking lives. It's because you're dominated by an advertising arm that puts one label up against, what is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38. So roughly the 40 top brands of Procter & Gamble use the same amount of marketing ad dollars as Samsung does across all of the various Samsung products and services. That's what I mean when I say that this is an advertising and a marketing exercise we have never seen the likes of before. So here, let me get this out of the way. Galaxy S21, what's frustrating is I'm going to be more excited for 2021 phones because of these efficiency improvements, just like, you know, back when I was reviewing iPhones, I really liked going with the S series iPhones because they were often improved, refined, a little bit more powerful, but they would fix the problems of the major number releases. iPhone 4, not as good as the 4S. iPhone 5, not as good as the 5S. You know, you would kind of see that trend continue. What's frustrating is consumers seem to want the more nifty or the more obvious, like, aesthetic changes, and they don't follow up on the phones that are better refined. And that's the bummer, is like, I bet you the S21 is actually, for all accounts, for all comparisons, for all metrics, this is going to be the better phone to have. But the S20, because it was the S20, it was the first time we kind of shifted this design language, and it was the new path for Samsung, will probably have been the better selling phone. That kind of stuff is difficult for my brain to kind of reconcile. It's, you know, the popularity of how one phone sells versus the real true performance refinement benefits that come from those types of gadget purchases. Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Mmm, savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
I mean, again, and as it stands, I won't be jumping on the early review train for the Galaxy S21. Since there might not be a Note, I will try and get on the S series more aggressively and maybe borrow, or I really hate when people buy a phone and then return it. I just feel like there's something so scummy about that, and I really don't like doing it. But for a Samsung, maybe that's all the coverage I need. I bought this phone. I'm returning it in 2 weeks. Here's the Mega Pickles. Enjoy. I don't know. It's gross. I don't like that. So, regardless, a Galaxy S21 Ultra review will probably be late, but I want to talk about a stylus-enabled Galaxy. So that's where we are. DJNL, M. Night Shyamalan ending. Random Stuff 2 channel is actually one's third channel. Oh, you got me. Here's the Galaxy S21. Woohoo! It's not. That was a Nord. All right. We're already over for the podcast. I saved it for last, but I did want to kind of share a few more thoughts. Apple announced some headphones. I've been skeptical about Apple's commitment to audio technologies and to improving audio tech for consumers and the relationship that they have with consumers as it sort of correlates, not causes, but correlates with trends that I find very disturbing, like the rapid rise of hearing loss in young people and across all age demographics, but especially in young people. So AirPods Max. Chat, how are we feeling about the AirPods Max? $550. The technology on board is single driver, which isn't necessarily bad. Single drivers can be premium audio solutions, and when tuned effectively, can be incredible audio performers. No headphone input, so you have to buy an additional $35 Lightning connector adapter if you want to plug them into anything with a cabled connection. There's a digital crown at the top in a very fiddly location to control your volume. It's a power button and control button. There are no touch or additional controls on the casing of the headphones. They've got like this mesh. The thing I actually do like about the headband, those types of like mesh resistive headbands, to me, what was the Meze 99s, like a, what, $300 pair of like wood cup headphones were really comfortable. When tension is kind of distributed across some sort of floating headband, that can actually be kind of nice. So I kind of like the design. I like that the design is sort of like putting a magic mouse against your ear with sort of soft foam mesh, or it looks kind of like the side casing of an Apple Watch. There's a consistency and visual aesthetic that I think is very appealing. But $550, and Apple still doesn't seem to support any type of advanced audio codec. There is no wireless connection option for Apple lossless audio. It's a Bluetooth headset, and I'm sure the noise reduction is going to be very good. But the main play that they're talking about is, I'm actually showing some of the internals here. It looks like a normal single dynamic driver. They've got this, it's distortionless because we've got something that's going to minimize distortion with this little magnetic motor. Okay, that probably introduces material and build costs, but I feel like we've solved that issue with dynamic headphones for less expensive tiers of products. And then the big thing is computational audio. So there's a special chip in the headphones that will listen to the world around you and alter the noise reduction and the EQ and the spatial audio to adapt to the space that you're in. And that makes me really nervous. I don't like adaptive or computational auto settings. I don't like them on cameras. I don't even like them on my phone screens. I typically don't let adaptive brightness stay on my phone screens. It's usually not the correct brightness for the location around me or for what I want. So the idea that it would be real time constantly manipulating my EQ and changing the stereo dynamics of my headset makes me very concerned. That's not what I like about consuming audio. So to me, this looks like a $550 exercise in making AirPods even more of a label and a fashion statement. I'm sure the sound quality is going to be good, but I am seriously skeptical that this is going to outperform $280 Sony XM4s, let alone like some of the options you can put together with some planar magnetics and maybe a portable DAC. You know, for a while there, the LCD ones, the Odysseys, were on sale for $300. And you could put them up with like, you can actually power them decently with something like the FIO BTR5, which I've got a review on my channel. And this combined was $400. $400 for Bluetooth or cabled audio playback, a great DAC amp. It even has like balanced 2.5 millimeter balanced output, if that's your thing. You could pair them with $300 planar magnetics and still be $150 cheaper than what Apple is going to do here on the AirPods Max. So I'm not particularly impressed with Apple's conversation here. I haven't tried them, obviously. I haven't listened to them. I'm not on Apple's reviewer list, so I'm definitely never going to get early access to any Apple gear, just like I don't with Samsung. But this isn't the direction I want the consumer conversation to go for audio. If you're coming from EarPods, moving over to AirPods Max is going to sound incredible. But you could have done that before, and you could have done that cheaper with some other manufacturer, with some other audio solution, and from brands that have decades-long relationships with not only music consumption, but music recording. Now, why I'm such a shill for companies like Sennheiser and Audio-Technica and Sony isn't just because like they're popular consumer brands. It's because I have worked with those products in mainstream recording studio nuanced facilities that demand a very particular tier of quality and accuracy. And some of that DNA gets filtered down into the products that are sort of pointed and directed at general average consumers. And when I started this conversation, people would kind of blink at me when I would say things like, hey, I love my Behr Dynamics. I've got these DT770s. They're like $200 headphones.
$200? I mean, that's because you're a pro. I mean, no regular person should spend $200 on headphones.
And now, like, prices on 770s have dropped as Bluetooth options have gotten even more expensive. So, like, spending $250 on little Bluetooth earbuds, like, okay, yeah, that seems reasonable. Spending $170 on 770 Pros, the 250 ohms, like, oh no, clutch my pearls. That's such an extravagance. Because the label isn't premium enough? Because they're not outwardly advertising that I spent $200 on headphones. The main draw, and again, TechAlter tweeted something like this too, and I completely agree with him. They're going to be successful. Apple is going to create a new tier of popularity, and it's all because they're charging so much for the AirPods Max. They will be successful and popular because they are expensive, not despite their price. And it's going to be that whole new ratcheting of that team Apple don't speak broke, I've got to flex and show off my AirPods, even though they sound like, I don't want to say they sound like garbage, but they don't sound great. And they're really expensive for mediocre, average audio quality. And I'm worried that $550 is going to get us basic Siri integration in a way that Pixel Buds could probably destroy. It's going to get us very good active noise cancellation in a way that like Bose and Sony have already been, you know, sort of leading the market on that kind of technology. And then they're going to sound more interesting, but they're not really going to sound better. You're going to start playing with all the EQ and people are going to, wow, this sounds so interesting, so colorful. It's so vibrant, but it's not really quality. It's not really improving the audio listening experience. It's just sort of distracting, kind of like, you know, Boom Sound and Beats way back in the day. Boom Sound was an EQ manipulation hack. An LG Quad DAC is just power. And that's what I wish more consumers had some experience with, or some ability to have that kind of a conversation. You know, running the right power to a pair of nice headphones delivers a vibrance and a clarity and an accuracy that can be breathtaking when you listen, when you really want to just listen to a good piece of music. Tricking the ear with a bunch of EQ hacks for smiley face and deep V cuts and super mega bass and all that stuff isn't the same. It's kind of like, you know, you look at a photo that's from a phone that really does heavy-handed HDR processing and you're like, yeah, it's really juicy and vibrant and colorful. Real life did not look anything like that. That photo is designed to impress someone on Instagram. It's not something that I would want to hold on to as a memory or to archive as an important moment in my life. It's just hyper bright. And that's not what I'm looking for. But again, you know, having that kind of a nuanced conversation immediately just kind of brings up these sort of like false equivalencies and this sort of emotional attachment that we have to labels and brands. And now Apple, with these AirPods, for as much as I'm positive on the Apple M1, with these AirPods, it's like another exercise in turning the Apple logo into something like the Louis Vuitton badge on a purse. You don't need to spend $5,000 on a purse for a functional bag that looks good and holds all your stuff. You spend for that LV logo to show people that you spent for the LV logo. And I don't like that from a company that I feel at one point helped revolutionize consumer digital audio and has been coasting on that reputation for 20 years almost. Whenever the first iPod came out, I don't know. It's been a while, and I don't feel like they've really contributed much to consumer audio since then. From Nick Fell, Apple did not announce an improvement in their Bluetooth bandwidth. To go with this, I expect this is a cash-in on the AirPods brand and is premium to be premium, not to be a quality audio experience. What will this compete against? XM4s, and those are under $300 already. Oh, and from All Greg, that damn ugly case. Where is the case? Yeah, the case is a travesty. $550, and it's just a little flap that kind of covers the casing, but it's got these open vents where gunk and stuff could get in. The tops of the headbands are completely exposed. It looks like, you know what it looks like? Do you remember those terrible phone holsters we used to get with like Windows phones, Windows mobile phones, like back in the day, like those old XDA devices? You'd have that really ugly, like leather flip over fold case. I wonder if I still have one. I don't think I have one on the bookshelf right now. But I used to keep business cards in them because like I would refuse to put that on my belt. It was so hideous to have that kind of a phone holster ready to go. I just never was that a good look. And that's exactly what these look like. When if you buy like a pair of Odysseys, which I almost threw my LCD ones off of my table, you get this really nice hard case as a travel solution. So you can really protect and enclose your headphones so that, you know, the other contents of your luggage don't like get bits of lint or grit or sand in with your fancy headphones. But apparently, one of the main aspects of this case is that it's the only opportunity you have for a low power mode. That they don't have the same kind of shutdown or power button response. So if you want them to kind of hibernate, you have to have this case. And that, to me, is just pants on head dumb. Like, it's just bad design. And so J Million is asking, are these still just AAC? Yeah, they are still just AAC codecs. And I wasn't expecting them to license LDAC, but what I was hoping is that maybe they would have some kind of direct pass-through for Apple lossless. So if you bought music, you know, through Apple for like high bitrate, it would be a one-to-one. Totally locked up, totally proprietary, that would totally suck. But if you were in the Apple ecosystem and you wanted something audiophile, that could be a solution. That would be worth, you know, a premium, in my opinion. I wouldn't spend $550 for that, but I wouldn't feel like you were the wealth extraction machine from Apple wasn't being overly aggressive in squeezing people's wallets. McCorcoran 3, I'll just use my anchors and spend the $500 extra on food and other necessities. Again, like, when you can find some real good options in that, like, $50 space, $100 space. I guess some, I mean, like, One More's were on sale. You could get, like, One More dual and triple driver earbuds for, like, $120. I broke it down. Like, you could get Behr Dynamic DT770s, a Phio BTR5, and the One More dual driver crazy ANC. Like, the One More active noise cancellation is almost too good. Like, it can be disconcerting. Like, it feels like your ears are getting sucked into a vacuum. The ANC is so aggressive. And still be like $50 cheaper than the AirPods Max. And it doesn't matter because none of those have the right label. None of those have the right branding. And none of those are coming from a trillion-dollar corporation with an enormous marketing budget to put these under people's noses and make them feel like they're missing out by not wearing the right label. from Loki Ted, imagine buying the XDR display stand to hang the AirPods Max off of. You have flexed on the pores. So what I need for my $550 headphones is a $1,000 monitor stand, and I'll just use that as a hook. From Hickey, I'm skeptical about the audio quality. The technology will be seamless and easy to use, and the spatial audio might be a nice thing. The audio won't most definitely be on par with good Sennheisers or Audio Technicas or anything that produces natural, spacious, and flat equalizer reproduction of audio. And again, it's hard to teach that. You walk into a Best Buy and you're going to see a bunch of TVs on the wall. It's easy to understand what's different about HDR displays and 4K and 8K TVs and these numbers. I mean, again, it doesn't really improve the television watching experience, but you can be bombarded with that. Headphones are more experiential and more unique, and everyone's body is a little bit different and they're all going to respond a little bit differently. And you can't educate as easily. Can't just walk up to a wall of headphones and go, oh, okay, well, I can hear how they're all different. You know, like, you have to sample each one individually. And so that's what's really going to play into the favor of the AirPods Max. Someone who's listened predominantly on earpods is going to put them on and go, whoa, and color and vibrance. And my audio has never sounded so good. And they could have had that years earlier for a lot less. So it's just a bummer. Again, I feel like Apple is one of those, like, you love them for some things and then absolutely hate them for others. You know, where we were in the age of BlackBerries and Windows Mobile, Apple defined a consumer revolution for pocket smartphone computers. Great. They deserve so much credit there. Their audio efforts have been reductively, extravagantly obnoxious cash grabs. From removing the headphone jack to using open ear designs since the beginning of the iPod, to talking about sustainability in the environment while selling products that all have these disposable lifespans and require extra accessories to fully complete the experience. I'm very cynical about what Apple is trying to accomplish here. So my fear is Apple delivers AirPods Max at $550. Does this mean that like my next pair of Sennheiser Momentums are going to be $499 when they don't need to be? Will the Sony XM5s creep up to $350 or $375 just because they can? It's frustrating because Apple has this effect on the market where they can keep ratcheting up their prices because of their entrenched consumer base, but then the whole rest of the industry with comparable and competing products goes, well, hey, us too. I want to make more money. I want to pad out my profit margin heavier. Let's do it. And it's just such an ugly amplification. It's such an ugly aspect of how tech works for consumers. Goran, I mean, I wouldn't use a word like best, but I definitely appreciate the sentiment. My experience with wireless headphones, and I'm not a bass addict, is the ATH M50X Bluetooth. So those are Audio-Technicas, and the M50s are phenomenal. Goran says they sound the best for the asked price, better than many more expensive, excellent on a 3.5 millimeter cable, but no ANC. And for that, probably Sony, do not count on good wired experience on the Sonys. Then the nice thing is if you have cans and they're closed back, you actually reduce a fair amount of noise passively. So you can spend a little bit more on audio quality and not worry as much about some of the techie stuff like active noise cancellation. From Rami, Apple AirPods Max price in Finland, €629. €629. Blah. from Zelk Knight, watch Apple make an AirPods Pro Max for $1,000. Yeah. Actually, you know what? From Zelk Knight, let's make that our outside Vegas odds that in 2021, there's a refresh where we get Apple AirPods Max and then Apple AirPods Pro Max. And the Pro Max have a special chip from Apple. It's the H2 chip. And that chip communicates directly to your iPhone and you can stream on Apple Music in lossless quality. Can't do it on Tidal. They won't bump up the streaming rates for Spotify, but they'll lock you in. If you want lossless audio wirelessly, $1,000. I'm right there with you. I think that's the jam. From Loki Ted, speaking of, did you all hear about Carl Pei starting an audio company? The most public figurehead of OnePlus is apparently his next endeavor is going to be audio tech. And I feel, again, I'm not trying to be overly cynical here, but I really like One More. I think they've got some great products. They're very competitive, some cool tech, good audio quality. I mean, it goes hand in hand with a great reputation. And they started off as a Xiaomi spinoff. You know, they started their production sort of under the Xiaomi parts bin. I don't know. I mean, the relationship, Carl Pei's relationship with Oppo and the BBK brands would afford him maybe some audio tech and some components that would be very competitive in a similar way. And as we've seen from some of these other brands like KZ, you can deliver some stonking, like Blonde, Simgot, or CCA. I've got, you know, 8-driver CCAs that they're not my favorites, but they are very interesting earbuds to listen on. You can do some really interesting things with audio tech and not be crazy over the top wallet breaking to play that game. Simon says Hypno, AirPods Ultra Max will require a mortgage. Oh man. Ah. I didn't see the video. Apparently, Painfully Honest Tech was drawing a line between iOS and Android users. The nice thing is, so often There's like stuff in Apple tech land that I desperately want on Android land, right? Last couple of years, I haven't found it. You can trump up like, oh, the Apple A14 is such an amazing processor. And I don't care. I really don't. It's really not so much better that it makes me feel like I'm not getting my work done on Snapdragon 855s or 865s. I look at the audio situation and we are so much better off in Android land. I'm okay drawing that line in the sand and saying we, and including myself as in primarily as an Android user, it's just no contest. We have choice. We have better choice. And we've caught up on all of the fun extras. You know, like, I kind of don't want to do this, but I unpaired my Pixel Buds from my Pixel 5. And when I open this case and it starts looking around, other phones are going to start perking up and going, oh, hey, do you want to pair with these? I'm reviewing some earbuds that I'm under embargo and I can't talk about, but, you know, just from another manufacturer that I've done some coverage for in the past. And same thing. I open the lid and the earbuds just go, hey, connect to me. And my wife's phone across the room said, these earbuds want to connect. Do you want to connect with these earbuds? The magic of this Apple synergy, we've got it. We don't need to feel like we're missing out on this nifty pairing and connections with other products. Like, it's there. It's a thing. So when we get LDAC and APTX, we get low latency Bluetooth options, we get high bit rate, high quality options, we can fulfill much higher quality listening experiences for much lower price tags. Now, we're good. We don't need anyone to replicate Apple's business model here. It's just frustrating because I'm sure they're going to have an effect on that kind of on that kind of market. Yeah, Matt Tyler and Aditya Nell telling me to check my posture, and I'm almost done with this mug of water, and we're way over. This podcast, we should probably start wrapping it up, but I just kind of want to wrap through a bit more of this chat. Oh, Matt, I've been here this whole time. I've been busy, but had one's relaxing, non-sarcastic voice on in the background. I've been nothing if not even keeled and completely fair throughout this entire podcast. Simon says, if no, 146 minutes and still no, but I digress. All right. So let's go ahead and put a pin in it. Yes, lots of news to follow up on. Definitely some political shenanigans we need to keep our eyes on. And I would highly recommend checking out some of the stories, not only around Hardware Unboxed and NVIDIA, but kind of rolling out. The next year of phones, I think, is going to be really interesting, but not quite as exciting as 2020 was. We're going to see, you know, follow-ups on folding phones, on dual display, on modular designs, on stylus-enabled designs. And it's going to feel like, oh, but we saw that last year. So what's better? And I feel we're going to be missing some obvious points. I'm drawing this line in the sand now. And I'm wanting to hold reviewers up to a higher standard of reviewing in 2021. Because I feel last couple of years, these conversations have gotten kind of lazy. I want to see someone pick up a Galaxy S21. They'll comment on, well, the design is a little bit different and it's a little bit more refined, but it feels very much like the same phone that Samsung put out last year. But I want them to do more than just some BS generic screen on time. Oh, the screen on time got better. No, I actually want us to see if we can't detail what are the benefits to consumers if we improve the radio reception and integrate that into the SoC. And I want to see, like, don't tell me that average consumers are going to buy a $1,000 phone and then shoot 1080p video at 30 frames per second. And that's like how they should be used. I want to see, what does this mean for triple camera modes in 4K? Has Samsung leveraged the full potential of this chipset, of this SoC, to drive an experience that matters for someone when they're spending $1,000 on a gadget. And that's what I want to see. And those are the conversations I want to have. And I hope those are the kinds of conversations you'll be looking for too. And I don't think it's okay for us to just sit back and sort of be content with pretty B-roll and then confirming the biases of the biggest audience that's the most profitable on YouTube. I want to see that we're really trying to hold these manufacturers to their claims and that the consumers who pick up these products understand. We can be the arm of that education that they understand they could be doing more for their purchase and not just relying on the same, I use the same three apps. Oh, I guess I need a new phone so I can open Instagram faster. That's not the gig. So, but I digress. So, folks, I want you to have an amazing week with your technology. I've got a bunch of stuff coming down. I'm catching up on some audio reviews. I got a really fun microphone that I'm going to be taking a look at. I've got another little mini PC build that I'm working on. I showed it off, but MSI sent this over. It's crazy late. A bunch of other people have already reviewed and commented on the MSI Creator laptop, but I'm going to spend some time with it. I'm going to put it through some paces. I'm going to show you how a phone might be competitive with this $2,000 laptop. I think that's kind of an interesting conversation. And then just some more wrap-up videos too. I've got a video that I just wrote the script for on how to spruce up your family videos. So, you know, some tips and tricks on making better holiday content or sharing memories or really kind of capturing moments. So, you know, check it out. Do the thing. Watch the gig. And then this Thursday, I don't know, is TK still in the chat? He might have bounced out. Again, this has been a very long podcast. So it would be totally okay if TK isn't still sticking around. TK and I are maybe considering some type of conversation. This Thursday, the evening Pacific time. I don't know. TK and I have wonderful conversations. And if you just like to hang out and chat with two content creators and, you know, nerd out on some consumer electronics and some tech, I feel like you could do way worse than me and TK chatting about some stuff, right? No, so this Thursday, TK and I have been talking about just trying to collaborate a little bit more beyond just our yearly phone swap challenge. Be on the lookout this Thursday because I think it's going to be a lot of fun and hopefully something that we can kick off as a more regular co-production for both of our streams and our audiences. So Nick Fell, put it on YouTube so I can super chat. We'll be sharing a few more details as we get a little bit closer, but I feel we'll be able to satisfy that, Nick. So, and also just, you know, if you're here on the Twitch, if you follow on the YouTubes, and then I want to also make sure that the audio folks are covered too. So, I want you to have an amazing week. I've got a very busy week ahead, wrapping up some stuff for the year, but we're going to have some fun all along the way as we lead up to the end of this year, the beginning of next year, and I'm so glad to have you all along for the ride. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. Be well. Definitely take care, because it's still, every day is getting a little bit crazier than the day before it. So keep your head down, stay safe, wash your hands, don't take any unnecessary risks, and I want to see everyone back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'll catch you all back. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.